Van der Gijk who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal. A sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell Van der Gijk.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we came, became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate. We never won anything.
Man's in trouble. There's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lucas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who are wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is this!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. It's a good deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. I think we've got a night of nostalgia as we look back in the 2012-2013 season. And I'm pleased to be doing so in the company of Buster and Motherwell assistant boss, Keith Lasley. Guys, welcome along. How's it going?
Not bad, yourselves?
Yeah, good. Good, Andy. Good, Buster. Good to hear from you again.
Well, this is an idea that we've just kind of had during the downtime over the summer, looking back at a season that was picked in a fan poll on Twitter. We went for 2012-2013, which won the vote by quite a distance. It was a season that Champions League football came to Fir Park. There was also a meeting with La Liga opposition in the Europa League. And we were going to finish second with the manager scooping Manager of the Year and Michael Higden the Player of the Year. It actually started in rather strange circumstances. The Rapid Bucharest friendly, which was meant to be played in Grangemouth, was rained off in the middle of July, which, well, I suppose with Scottish weather, you never know what to expect. First friendly, a 4-0 loss to Ayr United. That would be followed up by a 1-1 draw with Raith Rovers. And then the friendly at Arbroath was called off as well. Keith, it's fair to say this isn't really the way we were expecting to start the season, particularly with the Champions League on the horizon.
No, it's not ideal, shall we say. But it's funny, you know, being involved in a lot of pre-seasons and you know, it doesn't always correlate to what's going to happen in the season ahead. You know, listen, obviously ourselves involved in pre-season at the moment, you do want to win the games and you do want to, you know, build up a little bit of momentum, I suppose, by getting used to winning games, but you know, history has shown, and that certainly showed that season that you know, our results were mixed to say the least. But you know, we then go on to have a fantastic season. So yeah, I mean, I can remember the games in question, particularly the one at Ayr United, which wasn't much fun, and we were told so in strong terms afterwards. You know, it was certainly wasn't good. And yeah, if anything, maybe it just gave us a little kick up the behind to get ourselves ready for, you know, a big season ahead with some, you know, big matches, as you've already mentioned.
Things did pick up in pre-season. There was a draw with Everton in Steve Hamill's testimonial, and a 3-0 win at Hamilton as well. Buster, we've heard Keith talk about the great career that Stevie Hamill had at Motherwell. Obviously, more than deserving of his testimonial. He's an absolutely fantastic servant, and it's exciting to have him on board with the academy now as well.
It definitely is, and I think it's kind of frightening that was, 6 years ago as well. That's an awful long time. When we went over these, you know, when we decided we were doing this and went over them, I looked at these and I thought, I don't remember these games getting rained off in the middle of July. I remember United pumped us, and I remember Stevie Hamill's testimonial, but I don't remember. I think I was on holiday or something, because I don't ever remember being at any of these games. But as you say, Stevie Hamill's still at Motherwell. Just shows you how long he's been there. When I'm looking back and thinking, Jesus Christ, that was 6 years ago.
We would then move on to Champions League qualifying action. Panathinaikos, the visitors to Firth Park. I would say that go down as one of the biggest occasions I've ever been at Firth Park for. Someone going to answer that?
Sorry. It's my phone. 2 seconds.
Jane, can you get that?
So we've learned you still use your house phone, that's good. The next up was Champions League action, something I don't think we'll get to say very often in a time following the club. Absolutely massive occasion, Keith. A fantastic crowd, a great atmosphere. In the game itself, the team made a pretty positive start before falling a goal behind. And we had chances again to get back in terms before they scored quite late on to double their lead. Perhaps a step too far, but it must be an occasion and memories that will live with you forever.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, it was extra special for me. It was actually my first season as captain of the club as well, which, you know, is a great honour in itself. But for, you know, my first competitive game to be a Champions League qualifier was you know, pretty special. So, yeah, I mean, to have, you know, obviously all the guys with their families there, but as I said, that little edge for me to know that I had my family, you know, my family there watching, you know, lead the team out and that. And, you know, I don't think we were supposed to play the music as it was a second round qualifier. I don't think we were supposed to do that until the playoff round, but, you know, I think the theme tune was getting blasted out. And, yeah, just a great occasion. And, you know, again, we're lucky enough to play quite a few European ties now at Firth Park. And just to see the place buzzing and you know, I'm not sure what the crowd was, but, you know, up to, you know, possibly up in the region of, you know, 9,000, 10,000 Millwall fans in Firth Park. It's just, you know, it's a joy to behold, to be honest, to play in front of that. And, you know, as for the game itself, you know, from memory, I felt as if we actually played really well in the game. And again, as has happened in other occasions, you know, like I said, Nonsay I can think of, Odense has been another one, that, you know, just, you know, the away goals just seemed to puncture us, you know, when we were, you know, having decent spells in the game. And, you know, I suppose that's what seasoned European teams do. They just, you know, manage to punish you at the right time and take the wind out your sails. And I think that's what happened in the game, because, as you mentioned, you know, generally we did have some really good spells in the game. We just couldn't score, which would have been fantastic for the occasion, for the supporters. But, you know, my overriding feeling was pride, really, more than anything. And, you know, the chance to play in the Champions League qualifier for Motherwell was just a really, you know, special occasion, and one that I still really cherish that I had the chance to do.
Well, it's kind of Football Manager type stuff, isn't it? It came in the back of a very good season in which we finished third, but Rangers got into
liquidation. Died.
No comment.
You can get yourself into enough bother with doing it on here as well. Just absolute fairy tale stuff, and the occasion, although it ended in a disappointing result, is one that we'll treasure.
No, when we qualified for Europe, we played Nancy, you know, in 2008, whatever it was, when we played them. You know, it was one of the things at the time we hadn't done for years. I remember being at, you know, up the home games for Katowice, and I think that was our first ever European game in 1992 and stuff like that. And it was just something that hadn't, you know, it never really come around in between those times until Nancy. And then we started to get a bit used to it. But you still never expected, you know, you'd hear the Champions League team tune and stuff like that at Motherwell. And, you know, as I say, unfortunate for them, Rangers' misfortune was their gain, I suppose. And, you know, it was great, the whole sort of waiting on the draw. I remember I phoned somebody after the draw, about an hour later, and I said to them, "Oh, Panathinaikos, that'll be good. What are we doing then?" And somebody said to me, "Have you not already booked yourself on a flight?" And by the time I went to book a flight, the prices were double what they were when everybody else had got them. So you know, that's all part and parcel. And even that sort of thing is you can't put a price on that. So again, it was the games themselves to me are a bit of a blur. I can't even remember much of them, to be fair, especially the away game. But you know, just even to think that's happened for a club like ours in my lifetime, that's just fantastic for me.
And then there's nothing like a good reality check after the high of Champions League. We opened the league campaign with an away game at Dingwall. My recollections of that game were it was a nice day. It wasn't much of a game. Ross County's first game in the top flight. We'd then gone to the second leg in Greece, and you've already alluded to it, Busta. The memories from that game, or the lack of them for some of us, in terms of a great trip, a great few days away, and I believe, Keith, that a lot of your family took in the trip as well.
Yeah, they did. As you mentioned the Nancy and the games and you know, other trips to Dance and yeah, my family managed to get to quite a few, and as I said, again, you know, go back to the thing of my first year as captain, again, leading your team out in the Olympic Stadium in Athens, it's just, you know, again, the things, if somebody had said I'd be doing that when I first joined at the club, and you just think, what, are you mad? So it was just a really fantastic occasion, and even the whole build-up to it, the travelling and getting out there, and as you said, knowing that my family's going to be there, walking out and seeing the Motherwell fans up in the stand, and even the night before, things like that, going and training at the stadium the night before, and just taking it all in, just you're involved in the Champions League and you're playing at that level, and to test yourself at that level in a professional capacity, but just to take it in, the whole thing as an occasion, and it is different. The European football, it is different. It's a different tempo, it's a different atmosphere around the game. The referees are different, the crowds are different, the noise is different from the crowds. You know, that's one thing, particularly Panathinaikos. It's a noise, it's like a drone, you know, it's different noises they make, and it's the bangs, and you know, I actually remember one in particular in that game. There was a proper explosion, you know, I thought half the stadium was away, but it was, I remember a couple of players, we looked at each other on the stadium as if, like, what has just happened? And, you know, it's just all their flares and their bangers and things, so just all that sort of atmosphere and things, it's just different to what you get. You know, from Saturday in Scotland. So, yes, you know, all in all, a fantastic, fantastic experience, I think, for anybody that was involved in it. And overall, I think the scoreline was pretty harsh. You know, it's probably, you know, as I said, these teams that we come up against, like Nancy and Panathinaikos, Levante, they just seem to have that bit more experience and just knew how to get the job done. And actually, over both legs, we felt as if we acquitted ourselves pretty well, albeit, you know, the aggregate score of 5-0, I think it was in the end, it doesn't suggest that. I think we were much better than that in the two games, to be honest. And you know, we're just, you know, never took our chances, and Panathinaikos took theirs, and you know, that's why it ended the way it did. But you know, a great, great experience overall.
Another element of that you had to contend with was the incredible heat and humidity in Athens. I remember Michael Higden out to warm up, and it looked like he had just run the London Marathon. It was
it was a good weight loss programme for the big man.
it was quite something, though, wasn't it? It was incredibly warm, even when the game started. I think it started about 9 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, that's right. I think we were still playing. You know, I think it was maybe 11 o'clock or something like that by the time the game had finished. And I must admit, I remember at the time it was just still roasting hot at that time, which was bizarre, really. But again, it just all added up to that kind of different type of occasion, something that you're not used to. And I loved that as a player as well. I loved that. That was what Europe was great for. It was, you know, Buster even mentioned the draw before and things like that. And you know, you went away in the summer knowing that this was all coming, and you know, I mean, you get a buzz out of any cup competition to see who you're getting, you know, and even in the Scottish, you know, this League Cup or be it in the Scottish Cup, but you know, the European draws were just fantastic, just to learn who you were going to again, where you were going to be going, and you know, imagine it must have been the same for the fans. But as a player, to be involved in it, it was just great. And to get into training the next day, and you know, you can imagine the build up to the A-games plan with an ICOS, the work, you know, the talk between the players and things like that. It was just buzzing to be part of it, and just again, you know, the atmosphere within the place. But you know, the caveat of that was we were used to playing so many European ties. It did become, you know, you did get used to it again, which is strange to say. But that one was a bit special. You know, with it being the Champions League, it did create, you know, a real atmosphere about the whole club, which was unique.
The following weekend would be a 1-1 draw against St Johnstone. Stevie Hamill was sent off. Bob McHugh scored late on to cancel out Murray Davidson's opener. I think in the later stages of that game as well, Rowan Vine was sent off for St Johnstone. The first win came in a 2-1 victory over Kilmarnock the following week. And then it was on to Europa League action. Levante of the La Liga, the opposition for that one. First leg finished in a 2-0 defeat. Sean Hutchison sent off in that game. Again, and talked about it already, but that wee bit of experience, that wee bit of know-how and how to get the job done was pretty vital for Levante on the night.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was like it felt like a carbon copy, you know, as a lot of the European games have felt, unfortunately. You know, acquit yourself pretty well for a lot of the match and don't feel too far away from them. That was the big thing. I mean, even just jumping back to Panathinaikos for a second, but I mean, we lost that first home leg 2-0, and you know, everybody wrote us off after that, or and you know, and they end up maybe quite rightly with the next result. But we actually went to Greece with such a great belief, and I think it was because, yeah, they had beaten us, but we honestly felt as if they weren't that far ahead of us, you know, as a team, you know, we just felt as if we'd acquitted ourselves well. And I think Levante ended up being exactly the same. Again, they came and they won the game, but you know, as we're going to talk about the away leg, again, we felt close to them and we felt as if we had a real chance. Although, you know, the result didn't look great, we still had great belief in our ability and great belief that we could actually go and cause a real shock. And actually, you know, going into the second leg, you know, but, you know, a couple of decisions went against us, Big Higgy's goal and things like that, you know, got us chopped off. But, yeah, disappointing in the result and probably frustrating as well as disappointing, just that we didn't maybe just quite get what we deserved, if you like, certainly from the two performances in Europe that season.
August was an incredibly busy month. Following the game on the Thursday night, St Mirren visited on the Sunday. Michael Higden put Motherwell ahead after 2 minutes. Sean Hutchison got sent off again. And then Thomas Riley scored a 93rd minute equaliser. So the game would end 1-1. On to the second leg against Levante. Sean Hutchison didn't get sent off because he was suspended in that game. Michael Higden scored an early goal that was disallowed, and that would have given us that wee bit of hope, Buster, wouldn't it, to be back at 2-1 down. There's just always that possibility.
Yeah, you're right. From what I remember of these games, you know, I thought we were a lot closer to Levante than we were Panathinaikos. And I remember after the first leg of the Levante game thinking they were just a wee bit, you know, I hate to use phrases like they were a wee bit more street smart than us or whatever it was, but there was something there about them at that point, which that was it. That was all they had, really, just that a wee bit more than us. We were a bit naive, maybe. But as you say, you know, I think, to be fair, if you're, you know, they were probably better than us, but you know, I don't think it was by far, and it was always going to work out that way, I think, over two legs. But it was kind of disappointing, still all the same, really.
The Levante game finished in a 1-0 defeat in the end, but there was chances for us throughout the game. That obviously ended the involvement in European football. And at that point, Keith, you've talked about the excitement that comes with European football, the anticipation before it. To then go out, do you have to readjust the focus and try and set your stall to get there again?
Yeah, I think you do. I mean, there's no doubt it does. you know, the anticipation of the games that we've spoken about, you know, the buzz whole summer, you know, as a player, as a, you know, the fans, everything about the club. And then, as you say, when it's gone, it's, yes, that ability, probably mentally more than physically, to be honest. But, I mean, the games did take a lot out of us physically. But it's a mental thing. It's a mental thing, exactly as you said, to, right, we need to go and try and do it again. And, you know, we were in that period, in a, you know, that 5-6 year period where we did, more often than not, we did go and do it again. But it certainly wasn't easy. And I think, you know, a lot of credit to that's got to go down to, you know, the management and coaches who managed to do that, to get us back on, you know, what was, you know, two disappointments in quick succession, really. Albeit, you know, some of the performances were decent, as we've spoken about. But, you know, you've just got to get back to your bread and butter and get back, you know, winning games to, you know, as you say, get back and get it again. And I suppose the one driver for you is that wetting of the appetite in terms of, and we spoke about it this season, of getting to one cup final. And yeah, can you go and achieve it again in terms of getting to a Scottish Cup final? It's such a hard achievement, but it's, what, you know, getting to Hampden, getting that buzz, it does, as a player, it whets your appetite, as a coach, it whets your appetite. You want it again. And I think probably in the end, that's what, you know, drove us on as right, we need to try and get back into that competition now. And to do that, we need to go and, you know, go and Saturday, every Saturday, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever it is, Saturday, we need to get back to Ben Button and win games of football. And, you know, while it's disappointing in the short term, I think ultimately you just need to get yourself back into that mindset. And I think, you know, the season proved that we did, and we managed to do that.
Well, it certainly did in the first game following the Europa League, a 4-1 victory at home over Inverness. Michael Higden bagging a hat-trick, and that certainly won't be the last time I mention a hat-trick and Michael Higden during this podcast. It was then on to the European break, when we would return with a 2-1 victory over Dundee. Michael Higden scoring a brace in that game late on, turning 3 points there. There was then a disappointing spell in September. The game at Pittodrie, Motherwell were very impressive and complete control, in my opinion. 3-1 up with 8 minutes to go. The game had finished 3-3, Niall McGinn scoring late on. And then there was the Rangers League Cup game, which was a real low point in the season. Rangers down to League Two, they're in the bottom flight, but we seem to go there and give them too much respect and deserve to lose the game. I'm glad and we can never have a podcast without going back to mention the playoffs, but for you must have suffered a lot of disappointments at Ibrox over the course of your career. So, and this was another one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably right up there with one of my biggest disappointments when you think back about it, you know, throughout my whole career, to be honest. I mean, I remember the build-up to that game. It was, I think there was a lot of, I'm trying to pick the right word, but certainly, I don't know, anger, spite or whatever within the, you know, the supporters and things. It seemed to be Rangers against, you know, not just Motherwell, but, you know, the fact that it was an SPL team going to there. And I think they'd kind of harboured that mentality within the stadium. So I remember the stadium being really hostile, actually. That I mean, you're used to going to Ibrox and it being noisy and not a big crowd, but it just seemed to be an edge on that game. You know, there's no two ways to put it. I mean, we just never turned up. We just didn't. You know, we let Rangers get on top of us, and which was really disappointing from our point of view. And you know, as I said, it was just disappointment all round, absolutely. And after that game, you know, it took a wee bit of getting over, because we knew we just let everybody down, let ourselves down, and you know, to go there in a game like that, and it's a game we felt we should be going and winning, and to put in the performance that we did was just so disappointing. And as I said, and amongst a really good season and some real highs, that's you know, definitely a real low, and something, and even talking about it now, certainly something I don't enjoy looking back on, to be honest.
The month ended with a 2-0 defeat and what was a rare 3 o'clock kickoff at home to Celtic. Adam Cummins sent off in that game, and then October started with power failure postponing the Dundee United game. The previous season there had been a fire in an electrical box, I'm sure, in the the South Stand when that cancelled a game against Hibs.
I can confirm that I wasn't involved in any of these electrical issues.
Well,
you think there's a pattern starting to form here?
Apparently we had the right man on the scene to fix them, but you'd
well, that's
job.
It, exactly. I was making a bit of cash on the side.
This power failure was throughout the town, so it wasn't down to Motherwell, despite some of the press reports at the time claiming otherwise. So we wouldn't actually play again until the 20th of October. The Celtic game fell on the 30th of September. That game, the first game back, was a 1-0 defeat at Hearts. Danny Granger scored from long range. I think it was a game that was moved to the Sunday for Sky Television. Then the following Friday, another game on the telly. They lost 4-0 at home to Hibs. Stevie Hamill had a bullet header ruled out despite being well over the line. There was plenty of chances we passed up. The referee, Stephen O'Reilly, it was a highly controversial performance to say the least. He awarded Hibs 2 second half penalties. The referee would then eventually go off injured, and Ian Brines, who I got a wee bit of a shiver down my spine actually reading his name when I was doing the he came on to replace him. A 4-0 defeat, Keith, but there was a lot of circumstances that contributed to that heavy defeat.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mention Hammy's header. I remember that clear as day. You know, I think and how far over the line it was. That's what I remember as clear as day. It was just ridiculous. And obviously, Hamill being Hamill, he doesn't. He's not certainly not prolific in terms of goals. So he's you know, getting taken what he can, and he was distraught after it. You know, he wasn't. He didn't get it, but it just shows you. I mean, even moments like that. Luckily, you know, well, not in our country right enough, unfortunately, at the moment. But in terms of goal line technology and things like that, which I think is a no brainer, to be honest with you, it just shows you moments like that, and you know, it really matters in terms of momentum in games and how they can swing and in different directions. And you know, that was a big one, and to go on and then lose the match in that manner was you know, disappointing to say the least. But yeah, I mean, a tough little period there, but you know, one again, like you know, I think we had one this year. I think back, you know, before kind of maybe a little bit later, kind of November, December, and sometimes you do have these little periods where, you know, you pick up, you know, three or four bad results in quick succession, and it's how you bounce back from that, isn't it? It's just trying to not let that run, you know, go on and trying to get back to winning ways. And I think that team, you know, in that season, we're pretty good at that, you know, and I think we're going to, you know, but some wins and some good performances, but there were certain games in that season as well where we never quite played as well, but that team had a knack of you know, finding a way to win, and you know, I think after games like that, it's vital that you do that.
That surely would have been Stevie Hamill's only headed goal in his career.
Well, he scored against Stjarnan with a header, if you remember, away from the edge of the box.
Well, that's right, huh?
Away, aye, if you remember that. But aye, he doesn't get many, does he? So he's actually, it's funny. You still, when you meet up and things, I talk about you moments like that happened, and that is an incident that does get brought up in conversation. So I think if you've got that referee's name again, well, Hammy might still want to have a wee word with him.
What's the process for goal bonuses there? Surely that's a goal. He's earned that.
I think Hammy was on about £1 million a goal as well. That's why. But I mean, some players do have, you know, little clauses in their contract like that. So I'm not quite sure Hammy had one, but no, it does happen. So I can imagine a few disappointed centre forwards here and there when they don't get their goals.
There's a few results over the season that I think almost felt like mini turning points. The 3-1 victory at St Johnstone being one of them at the start of November. A really impressive performance at a ground that's traditionally very difficult to go. They did get followed up by a 1-0 defeat against Dundee United in the midweek, but then draw one each at home against Dundee. And then the following Sunday, a 5-1 victory over Inverness. Again, a difficult place to go, but it was a very emphatic win. Scorers including Adam Cummins and Omar Daly Buster. It was a bit of a surprise victory, an early kick-off in the Sunday up at Inverness, but a very emphatic and valuable 3 points.
It was, yeah. I remember we all went up on the Saturday, actually, and we stayed over. I'm sure Omar Daly shot for about 35 yards and it trundled through the goalkeeper.
I remember it did.
I'm sure it did, right? But as you say, it was kind of surprising that we went up there and won with such ease. But I was probably sitting in the stand hungover as usual. But I do remember Omar Daly shooting for about 40 yards and it trundled through the goalkeeper's arms.
Next up was a 0-0 draw against Hearts and then a 2-1 victory up at Dundee United. That was the Chris Humphrey scored a fantastic opener, and then there was the Michael Higden celebration following the infamous photo shoot in the midweek, Keith, where Stuart Carswell missed his seat by quite some distance.
That's right. I remember back to the Higden celebration and things like that, and I don't know, it just seemed to be, the whole thing was just bizarre in terms of, getting banned and things like that. It was very strange. But I think he scored a few goals against Dundee United. I don't know if it was that game, but he certainly scored a cracker in another game at Tannadice, I can remember.
That was later in the season. Bubbled up in the top corner,
right? Aye. I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but the big man was on fire, obviously, so he's another winner. And then you could have just maybe picked a more sedate celebration and it would have been a good afternoon.
the one I was talking about though was the chair celebration at Tannadice.
Alright, I thought you were talking about the one he gave it
I think that was the season before.
Well, just as well I'm clued up in this season. Just as well I've done my research. The cheer celebration. I mean, Carl's at the four shoot. Right, I get you now. Well, that was Higgy Shell, right enough. He was always one of the liveliest characters, a livelier characters in the dressing room. So, he was always up to something. And it's good. Again, you go back to the what that team had, and I know it's a bit of a cliche, but there was a good kind of team spirit there, and I don't think you really have the season in Finnish where you do unless you've got that. And Big Higgy was at the centre of most of that, to be honest. So great character, and scoring the amount of goals that he did, it certainly gave him enough opportunity to come up with some new daft celebrations.
The month of December started with an early Scottish Cup tie, and again it was a late goal that denied us in the Scottish Cup. The game at Aberdeen finishing 1-1, a really hard one to take after Jamie Murphy had put us ahead with 10 minutes to go. The following week, a entertaining 3-2 victory over Ross County and a rare goal for yourself that helped us into the top four.
Yeah, that's right. I remember it. If I remember it rightly, if I can get the right season. But if I'm not mistaken, a Bob McHugh cutback to the edge of the box for me to kind of side foot trundle it into the bottom corner. But I remember the Aberdeen game as well. That was so disappointing. You know, I can remember us trudging off that park, and it felt, although we'd only drawn the game, it just did feel as if, you know, you'd been put out. It was that bad. I remember the last kind of 20 minutes or 15 minutes of that game, and we did, you know, as can sometimes happen, not even consciously, just subconsciously, you just get deeper and deeper, and you know, before you know it, you're just defending. And I think that's what happened in that game. So, you know, we did defend violently, and then to lose that late goal, it was gutting, to be honest with you. So that was a disappointment. But then again, as we spoke about before, after that disappointing bouncing back to win the league match after, it was great, and on the score sheet myself was just, you know, as I always did, most Saturdays, get on that score sheet was great, and I got my £5 goal bonus at the end of it.
The cup replay against Aberdeen, we had countless chances in the first half. Possible to put the game to bed by half time. Didn't take these chances. Aberdeen going 2-0 ahead, and we did get a late consolation, but we'd exit the Scottish Cup like we did the League Cup at the first hurdle. The cup form under Stuart McCall at times probably wasn't quite what you would expect for a team that were performing so well in the league. I know there was the Scottish Cup final, but that aside, there's a good few examples of times where we didn't quite perform in the cups, which is surprising considering the great success Stuart had during his time at the club.
Yeah, it is, and it's really hard to put your finger on it, really, you know, to pick out a reason why, you know, that was the case. It was a real disappointment, you know. It's the one disappointment, not just from that season, but, you know, that period, as you mentioned, because, you know, we've just, you know, in this season just gone past in terms of the, you know, getting to the semi-finals and finals, it's just so good to be a part of that, and, you know, unfortunately, we just couldn't quite get the job done in either of the finals. But, you know, getting a cup run is great for the fans and for everybody, really, you know, and we just never quite could put it together on the day and any one time under Stuart on the whole. And, you know, even for myself personally as a player, you know, played in the one Scottish Cup final in 2011 and, you know, two or three other semi-finals, but, you know, at the end of your career, you want to sit back and yeah, it's been great. We've spoken about playing European football. I wouldn't swap that for anything in the world, to be honest with you. But, you know, to actually win something, you know, have a winner's medal, and to be able to lift that cup as a player is something that you always dream of. And under Stuart, we just couldn't quite get there. You know, we just couldn't quite get the chance to get a chance of doing that, to get close to doing that, which was a disappointment. And, you know, I remember being really disappointed at the time, and looking back on it as a disappointment, because I think that period probably, I think, did deserve the consistency that we showed. I think it did deserve better in terms of, you know, something else to show for it, if you like. And when you see some of the other teams that did pick up trophies around about that period, you know, the likes of St Mirren and Kilmarnock and Inverness, and, you know, the list goes on, Ross County more recently, but it's a real frustration, actually, being a player at that time, that, you know, we and Motherwell, we just couldn't quite put it together in the cups, because, you know, I think a league form suggested that we really should have been there more often than we were.
We're possibly becoming a bit of a broken record here with the we bounce back patter, but again, the incredible win at Hibs following the Aberdeen Cup defeat. 2-0 down, Jamie Murphy gets a goal back and then scores with 10 to go. With minutes remaining, up steps Bob McHugh for an incredible winner. And I'm pretty sure that's one that saved the Christmas party as well, didn't it?
That was just about, I was just about to jump in with there. That was the night of the Christmas party, and what a party, put it that way. And Bob, who was, you know, it was a frustration for Bob at Mull. I think his Mull career should have been a lot better than it was. The ability he's got, and injuries, kind of persistent little niggly injury, just seemed to hamper him so much. And he's a great ability, Bob. I know he's still, you know, I think he's down at Morton now, and he showed glimpses of it, Bob, that season, I think, coming on, you know, and he nicked a couple of goals, and just his sub appearances, I think, you know, he made some real good impacts in games, but he just couldn't quite establish himself, and which was a frustration. But yeah, I mean, that moment was great. You know, to be 2-0 down at Hibs and know that you've got your Christmas due that night is no much fun, I can assure you. So it was, I think the danger of getting cancelled. But no, up popped Bob to the winner, and, you know, I think the celebrations after that game were a mixture of elation and relief that we could still go and have a party. So great moment, and you know, actually at the time I remember being delighted for Bob just to come in and make you know, such an impact on a big game like that. It was brilliant.
That's a buster, I think. Bob McHugh never really gets as many opportunities as he perhaps deserved. He was on the periphery throughout his whole Motherwell career, really, but he certainly was a bit of a cult hero at the same time.
No, that's right. There was a, you know, a lot of fans had a lot of time for him. I know. I think, as you say, he was always just on the sort of cusp there. It just didn't seem to come from. And I seem to remember at one point, I think we tried to loan him to someone in Division One, and he broke his wrist after about 3 days there, and he got sent back. And because at the time I think everybody was thinking, oh, a wee loan spell, get him some game time, that'll do him, you know, that'll do him a world of good. And I'm sure he went and broke his wrist in like the second training session or something he ever had. I think it was Partick Thistle. I don't know why that's. I'm not sure if that's right, but that's what I seem to remember anyway.
I think that might be right, Buster. I think it would have been. I remember the incident. I can't quite remember the team. I think it might have been Partick, actually. Aye.
Definitely something like that happened anyway. Aye.
The final game before Christmas was a 2-1 defeat at St Mirren. And again, we bounced back, Boxing Day, a 4-1 victory against Aberdeen. It was an absolute demolition job of Aberdeen as well. One of the best performances of that season in that game. And then the spirit was shown as well in the final game of 2012, a 2-2 draw against Killy, coming back from 2-0 down to get a share of the spoils. 2013 started with a 1-0 defeat at Parkhead. Gary Hooper scoring just after Tom Hatley missed a penalty.
I think that was late on as well, wasn't it? I think Tom, that's what I remember for that game, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was maybe about 15 minutes to go. Yeah. Was there and Tom, something like that? And aye, that was definitely a big opportunity to miss, because, you know, I don't think a record was great at either of the Old Firm, really, but, you know, to go there and have that chance. And, you know, Tom, he'd fancy, to be honest, great dead ball. I mean, he used to take a lot of our set plays, and obviously with his family connections, I would have loved to have scored a goal there and a winner there, really.
Looks like, I'm just reading it, sorry, as you were bringing it to talk, but it looks like it was just before Gary Hooper scored, actually, right? And that seemed to be 10 minutes before the end of Hooper scored that day.
Yeah, it was 11 minutes before full time. Gary Hooper scored. There's then a couple of weeks winter break, and on our return we would beat St Johnstone 3-2. Michael Higdon put us 3-0 ahead with a hat trick. St Johnstone threatened a comeback. Nigel Hasselbank and Liam Craig scoring, but we held out for the 3 points. Then February starts with another cancelled game against Dundee United. No electrical faults this time, though, Keith. It was just the weather.
I'd fixed them all, you see.
After your sterling work to repair the electrics, the weather then started cancelling games. And then it was the Scottish Cup, which we weren't involved in. Return with Killy away, a 2-0 defeat. Yourself and Fraser Kerr sent off in that game, both for challenges on James Dayton. Was there something about James that particularly annoyed you that day?
I just didn't like him. It was too fast. No, I do. I remember that game. I mean, I think, to be honest, I think there was just a bit of frustration in that performance, from what I remember. So it was one of them.
But we would bounce back, a 3-0 victory over Inverness. Again, Michael Higdon scoring a hat trick, his second of 2013. We're only at February, his third of the season. Buster, just looking back in this season, and we've not got to the tail end when he really went on a scoring run. To score 3 hat tricks in a season for Motherwell is incredible stats.
Michael Higdon, I don't
know
if I'm wrong, Henrik Ayama played some part in Michael Higdon's success as well. I think if you look at the season as a whole, Ayama had something like 17 assists that season. Assuming I'm thinking of the right season, I'm sure of her. But Higdon was one where, because of his shape, his size and shape, a lot of people thought he was unfit or overweight or whatever. And I think that even when he was banging 26, 27 goals, whatever it was, some people just weren't happy with him. And, you know, I think that says a lot more about the people who weren't happy with him than it does everybody else. But
or does Michael Higden, but Michael Higden was phenomenal. And again, we'll get to it, but I think he's the only non-Old Firm player to win Player of the Year in somewhat the last 20, 25 years, something like that. It's ridiculous. What a guy he was, though.
February also brought the return to Fir Park of James McFadden, and he would come on as a sub in the rearranged game against Dundee United. Keith, the fans were massively lifted by James McFadden returning to the football club, and I would imagine as someone that's a good friend of his, it would have been a lift to the dressing room having someone of that stature returning to the football club where he made his name.
Yeah, it was massive. You know, he still, you know, kept in touch with James when he was away and things like that, and we found out there's a chance to come back, you know, or maybe it's mooted that that's a possibility, then it's, you know, you're doing all you can to persuade them to do that. No, but it's a big impact, you know. I don't think he never come back and played every game by any means, but just to have him at the club and his drive off the park in terms of you know, setting standards around about the place and training and you know, he was still a very good footballer, and I think, you know, particularly for the younger lads in the team to see him in training and to learn from him, and was a great boost, particularly at that time of the season, you know, to have somebody like that come into the place and give the place you know, a lift for, you know, the kind of final push, if you like, of the season. I think was a big benefit to us, and you know, it was great to see him back in Claret and Armagh.
After the Dundee United loss, we went to Ross County and lost 3-0, and things are beginning to look a wee bit shaky, but the resilience shows through again. Note how I didn't say we bounced back.
Good. How many other ones can you think of to substitute bouncing back?
No. Celtic visited Fir Park and we were in that game 2-1. Chris Humphrey scored in the opener. Celtic did get an equaliser, but Michael Higden's brilliant header. Was it a header? No, he didn't. He turned it in, didn't he? Well, he definitely scored the winner.
I was there and I don't even know, but he scored the winner.
Keith, wins against Celtic are rare at the best of times, but given that the team were on a poor run of form, to go out and beat them must have been a huge boost.
No, I think so. You know, I think I spoke about that before. I mean, if you go through you say you have a couple of bad results, you know, Celtic's probably not the next game that you want in that sequence, you know. But again, I go back to you know, the team that it was, and I said, you know, I think all the Motherwell teams that I played in over the years, and the team that season, I don't think player for player was the best team. I don't think it was the most technically gifted. You know, probably, you know, not the strongest, or not the, you know, I've played in teams that have been stronger and more technical than that one. But what that team did have was a will to win, a togetherness that we've, you know, spoken about already, and just found a way to win, you know, found a way to win games, found a way to, for the want of a better phrase, bounce back and after disappointment. And, you know, I think that said something for the resilience of the team, and the manager and the coaches. You know, I think, you know, no matter win, lose or draw, we had a real spirit in that team, and that allowed us to bounce back, that allowed us to believe that after a disappointment we could you know, come back from, and even against the likes of Celtic. So we would have been into that game, you know, from the outside, people looking in thinking, oh, they must be down after being, you know, a couple of bad results, whatever, and they're playing Celtic, oh, that's a gimme. But, you know, as I take it right back to the European games, you know, even though we'd been beat heavily, or not beaten, you know, comfortably, if you like, we still had belief in the second legs of the games. Likewise, when we beat a couple of league games, we still believe we're going to win the next game. You know, it's that belief that we had. And I mean, I think it came from a kind of build-up of consistency of performance over, you know, a number of the years, but particularly that season, we just believed that we could go into any game and win it. And, you know, to go and do it against Celtic, you know, which we never had the best record against, was you know, was big, and particularly that stage of the season as well, to set ourselves up for
you know, the running, if you like. I think it was good to make, to get a result like that against Celtic and you know, really kick us on.
We go into the month of March and begin it with a 2-1 victory at Tynecastle over Hearts. An early Michael Higden goal followed by an own goal puts ahead early doors. John Sutton got one back for Hearts, a rare moment where Motherwell fans disliked the big man. We then went to Aberdeen and got a share of the spoils, a 0-0 draw. A fantastic performance from Darren Randolph that day. Buster, we've not mentioned Darren Randolph on this podcast, but certainly a fantastic goalkeeper, one of the best, or the best for me in living memory. It's not been surprising to see him go on and achieve great things elsewhere.
No, you're right, and it's any time, especially, you know, with the situation we're in now, Trevor Carlson, you know, everybody's, you know, basically trying to move him on, but everybody's thinking he's going to be moving on, and, you know, we're looking to see if we can get a decent fee for him. Dan Randolph's always the one that comes up. You know, it's amazing how nobody put a bid in for him. You know, it's, I think if you speak to any Motherwell fan over the last, what, 10 years or whatever, they're going to say the best two goalkeepers at the club would have been Dan Randolph and John Ruddy. And John Ruddy was only here on loan, obviously. But, I, you know, it still sort of perplexes me that no one took a chance, if you want, on Dan Randolph until he was available for free. And even then, he sort of had to go to a struggle in Birmingham, I think it was, and, you know, build his name there before he, you know, made his money move to West Ham or whatever it was.
Keith, I think Buster's hit the nail on the head there with Dan Randolph. You won't have been surprised to see the success he's had. A fantastic goalkeeper and a great guy as well.
Yeah, he's certainly the best I've played with, you know, at Motherwell, no doubt. You know, as you mentioned, John Ruddy and you know, right at the start of our career, Randy Gorham was there, obviously, kind of the latter end of his career, who was, you know, it was fantastic to see, you know, play alongside Andy and train alongside Andy. But in terms of, you know, goalkeepers at their best and who I played with, you know, Darren's definitely, you know, the best that I played with. And, you know, like games there, you've mentioned that Aberdeen game. You know, I think there were a lot of occasions, like, funnily enough, like I think Trevor did for his last season, was pulling off a big saves at big game, big times. And just, like, you know, we mentioned about Hammy's header not going over the line and not getting that, and subsequently going on to lose the game. You know, I think there was moments in games where, Big Daz has made some great saves, or a great save that has, you know, maybe kept us in the game or kept it at 1-0, or, you know, and we went them on to win the game. So it's you know, I think Darren's got to take a lot of credit, you know, a lot of credit for where we ultimately ended up. And it's no surprise to me that he's ended up going on to have the career he is having and continues to have. Obviously, you know, I think he's Ireland's number one now, and you know, he's playing in played in the Premiership and playing in a Middlesbrough side now that is, you know, I'm sure is geared up to get back into the Premiership. So no surprise there, because, you know, you could definitely see the signs back then of him being capable of playing at that level, just by the amount of crucial saves that he did make.
The fixture against Hibs at Fir Park was a direct contrast to the game earlier on in the season, a 4-1 victory after falling a goal behind. The second half, it was a spectacular performance with Michael Higden getting equaliser, James McFadden scoring his first goal since his return, Callum Higginbotham's spectacular scissor kick, and then Tom Hatley rounding off the scoring. Callum Higginbotham, Keith, a guy that didn't really get many opportunities in his time at Motherwell, perhaps hindered by the fact that James McFadden arrived at the same time, a player that played in the same position.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic goal you mentioned. You know, I can still picture that. I think it was Stuart Carswell, I think, that crossed it, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, that scissor kick into the corner. And he was capable of that, Higgy. You know, he'd so much. I think he's Dunfermline now, but it seems to have bounced about a couple of clubs. And, you know, he's actually better than that, Higgy. He really should be playing in the Premier League, in my opinion, just for the ability he's got. You know, obviously, you need other attributes to do that. And he's just not quite found a home, I think, that's allowed him to really flourish, you know, for a long period of time. But because which is frustrating, because he has got the ability to do so, and he did show that in flashes that season. And
as you mentioned, he couldn't quite nail a spot, if you like, and the team. No, I think another thing of that season is I don't think we had many injuries, certainly not many long-term injuries. So, you know, the team wasn't changing as much as you know, it maybe had in other years. So it was maybe a bit harder in the areas of the team to get in and keep your place. So it was maybe a bit frustrating from his point of view. But, you know, certainly in terms of even in training, some of the ability, some of the goals and trickery he showed then, it was a really good asset, even coming off the bench at times to try and change a game. And you know, I think he definitely played his part in that season, and you know, that goal being a perfect example.
Of course, guys that are involved in any way with the squad, they're going to want the team that they play for to do the very best they possibly can. But with success, I guess that limits the opportunities for the fringe players, guys like Callum Higginbotham, guys like Bob McHugh, as we've mentioned previously. That must be a test of their mental strength, and also a test for the manager as well, to keep these guys happy and to keep these guys as focused as they possibly can be should that opportunity arise for them.
Oh, very much so. I mean, that is a two-way thing, that. You know, there's no, you know, ourselves at the moment, we're trying to harbour that togetherness, and which I think we have shown in this squad. And I think that squad did have that. It's hard. It's not easy to do because, you know, as a professional, you want to play. You want to... You know, it's your job. You want to get out there and do your job. You know, you have to support your teammates. And you know, on the thought, you know, I think that did happen. And you know, I'm sure Higgy and Bob and players like that were frustrated. But you know, as I mentioned, I think we were pretty lucky that year with injuries and things like that. You know, that never seemed too much disruption to the team and the you know, the squad, really, the match day squad. There wasn't too much. You know, having to tinker with it too much. You know, guys could probably find themselves out of the team for 4, 5, 6 games at a time in a row, you know, which, you know, for any professional is frustrating. But, you know, it never seemed in the dressing room that there was really any disharmony at all. You know, obviously winning helps, you know, winning games and being part of a winning squad has helped the overall atmosphere. But they're never... You know, been in dressing rooms before where there are the comments, little, you know, a snidey comment here or there, and this, I'm not playing, and why is he playing? But it never felt like that, you know, it didn't, it really didn't. And the guys that, you know, were on the fringes, if you like, coming in, always seemed to be, you know, really eager to contribute. And, you know, I think that's testament to their character as well. And again, you go back, I don't think you can really have success like we did if you have that going on in the background. So it is credit to the lads that when they did came in, you know, they maybe fended their frustration in that way, and they did, you know, give some real good performances, even if it only was from the bench at times.
April would begin with a 2-2 draw against St Mirren, battling back from 2 goals behind, James McFadden's late free kick sealing a point, and that also, I suppose, kept us in the title hunt. Celtic would have won the league if we had failed to win on that occasion. We would then go on to the first post-split game, the game that you talked about earlier on, Keith, when you were getting your games mixed up.
That's right.
A 3-1 victory over Dundee United. Michael Higden's superb opener. Henrik Ayama doubling our lead after 8 minutes. Higden would then get another goal before half-time, before John Daly got one back in the second half for United. It was another fantastic result, Keith, and another fantastic performance.
Yeah, it was, and as we mentioned, we spoke about Big Higgy's goal. It was just, you know, just kind of, I think he summed up his season, that whatever he hit, it just seemed to find a top corner. And you know, I just a great hit. I think I was, you know, somewhere 10 or 12 yards behind him watching it, you know, flying straight in. So but yeah, I mean, we seem to have a great record at Dundee United. We seem to go through a period where they were really good at our place and we were really good up there. And you know, again, we managed to get up there against a good, you know, a decent Dundee United side, and pretty comfortably, you know, beat them. So again, a big result like that at that time of the season, getting up there. And yeah, as you say, maybe a little bit strange in terms of, you know, the fan numbers there, but you know, we certainly enjoyed that, and you know, again, just kept pushing Big Higgy on to
you know, it was going to end up being a really special season for him. But what a golden period in his whole career, I would suggest, is that, you know, that kind of couple of months where he just seemed to, you know, hit the net every single game.
Celtic would secure the title, but they were very much second best when they visited Fir Park following capturing the title. A 3-1 defeat at Fir Park, another brilliant performance. Michael Higden was in the headlines in the build-up to the game. Neil Lennon almost dismissing his Player of the Year nomination somewhat, but he answered in emphatic fashion, tucking away a penalty and then celebrating with the water off a duck's back celebration. It was Henrik Ayama who equalised just before half-time. Higden grabbed the second goal, and then a Mikael Lustig own goal rounding off the scoring. A 3-1 victory, and the second victory in as many months over the league champions.
Yep. I can remember the sort of dust on my shoulders, duck, water off a duck's back thing. You know, because as much as everybody who supports the team, Neil Lennon's played with or managed, as much as they seem to love him, he seems to annoy everybody else, you know, when he's in opposition to you. So it was good to see him get it right up him as well.
Well, it talks about bouncing back. Whatever the opposite of that is, we certainly managed to do the following week against Inverness. 3-0 down after 27 minutes. But we did fight back, eventually levelling at 3-3. James McFadden contributing a double in that game. But just as it looked like we were going to complete a remarkable turnaround, Billy Mackay completed his hat-trick for Inverness. They would go on to win the game 4-3. Buster, looking back at that Inverness side, they had 3 or 4 years of relative success and became a bit of a mainstay in the top flight. And they had some good players as well.
To be honest with you, I can't really think who they would have had. Obviously, Billy Mackay seemed to have a purple patch with him. I don't think he's had much luck anywhere else he's went. I think he's actually been relegated something like 4 out of 5 last seasons or something. I take it they would have had the Shinnies, or at least one of them at that point. Richie Form as well, actually. Richie Form would have been up there as well. So, you know, as you say, a couple of good players come through that team. And although them and Ross County are now in the lower divisions, it was always something that I was kind of, not surprised, but kind of like, I don't know, maybe surprised is the word, that how well both of those teams had done coming through the league so quickly, and, you know, both of them managed to pick up silverware as well.
The final home game of the season brought a 2-0 victory over Ross County. Chris Humphreys scoring a fantastic goal after James McFadden's opener, and we close out the season with a 2-0 defeat against St Johnston, in a game that, it must be said, meant a great deal more to them than it did ourselves. St Johnston needed a win to secure European football. That evening, Stuart McCall would be named Manager of the Year and Michael Higden Player of the Year. And it's fair to say that he enjoyed the most part of that night celebrating. Over the course of the season, Jamie Murphy and Nicky Law received Player of the Month awards, and Henrik Ayama was named Young Player of the Month. It was the previous season, Keith, that you received your Player of the Month award, just before you asked me.
My pride and joy, you mean?
I know you've said it wasn't the best team that you've played in, but going through the team like we have done, there was a great deal of quality there.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, I'm probably being a bit harsh in terms of saying it's not the best one, because individually, some individuals there were absolutely fantastic, you know. The main names that you've mentioned there in terms of Nicky and Jamie, and I think what it did do was, you know, when I say probably not the best team, I think maybe squad is a better thing. I think what we were lucky with, as I've said before, is probably injuries as well. We didn't have a lot of disruption to that team, and while we're saying that, you know, the guys come in and did well at times, I think if we did get 4 or 5 injuries maybe to key players, I think we maybe would have struggled to live a little, just to show, that consistency to finish in that league position. But, you know, you mentioned, Jez, you said Nicky Law, Jamie Murphy, Chris Humphrey, Darren Randolph, who we mentioned, Big Higgy, the season he had, Henry, as you say, with many assists he had. And what I think that team had more than anything was a good balance about it. You know, you had day players, but then, you know, you had a Stevie Hamill there, you know, 7, 8 out of 10 every single week. You know, though I took them myself, but you know, a couple older players, put it that way, I'm trying to say, a couple experienced heads and amongst these kind of younger, more exciting players, you know, that they would hopefully do that next bit. So there was a good balance about the side. You know, there was the emergence of some good young talent, like Sir Sean Hutchison coming through, Jamie Murphy, you know, coming in at the side as well. So enough youth, enough experience, you know, enough nous when it was needed, enough energy when that was needed, and enough ability, I suppose, when that was needed. So, you know, I think balance is a good word and I think partnerships as well. You know, you think of Higgy and Henrik, you think of maybe Hammy and Jamie down in Murphy down that left side, you know, Tom Hatley and Chris Humphrey down that right side, you know, remember myself and Nicky in the middle, and you know, so you know, you go through the whole team and you've got kind of partnerships almost all over the team, and I think that was probably a big key to your success as well, to be honest. So yeah, good, you know, it was, you know, great to be part of a fantastic season, and you know, a season filled with some real highs and players that, you know, I still keep in touch with at the moment. You know, it's, you did grow that bond, if you like, within that period, you know, which I think, as I said, when you're winning games, it's a bit easier to grow that bond, but you know, that's something that we did certainly do, and as I said, it's great to still keep in touch with a lot of these guys, and I suppose reminisce when we do get the chance.
And for yourself personally, your first season as captain, you obviously came in and replaced Stephen Cragan, who was a very commanding leader, a fantastic captain. Was that something that was a daunting challenge or something that you felt you were ready for and relished?
Probably a mixture of both, to be honest, Andy, and I suppose that sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but it was both in the sense that, you know, I knew it was a big responsibility. I knew it was, you know, taking over for Craggs and you know, just the actual role of being the captain itself and what that entailed in terms of, you know, hopefully trying to be a bit of a figurehead for the club and trying to, you know, in a practical sense every day in terms of dealing with players' issues and, you know, all the little bits and bobs that go along with that. But, you know, so that, what that was, you're thinking, right, I've got to get my head around this and do it. But, you know, I've got to say, when Stuart offered me, phoned me in that summer, the previous summer, and you know, it told me that was his plan to make me the captain going forward. It was, you know, it was great. It was, although, as I said, there was going to be a lot involved and a lot to think about, it was something I felt I was ready for. It was something I felt, it felt quite natural for me. It felt as if that was my next step. I wanted it. You know, I really, you know, when I, as I said, when Stuart offered me, it was like, oof, grab it with both hands. I just, it was something that I wanted to do, something that I think would actually get the best out of me. You know, I think in other sports as well, sometimes maybe, you know, the captain sees something that can maybe be a hindrance to some people or whatever, or maybe it could maybe affect them. But, you know, it's something for me that I relished and something that I felt would actually bring the best out of me. So, you know, it's probably twofold and something that I feel it did actually improve me. It improved me, you know, round about the club in terms of how, you know, I got involved and tried to be, you know, help the other players and help the younger players especially. It probably gave me a little bit more drive to do that even more, and probably in some way, many ways, although I was, you know, well into doing my coaching badges and things, it's probably propelled me on to, you know, certainly kind of push me even further into the direction that I'm in at the moment in terms of coaching and management, and probably kind of made my first steps into that side of it through becoming the captain and you know, taking more to do with the actual thinking about the game and not just being, you know, doing, having my own role to you actually start to think about other players in the team and what they're doing. So, you know, it was, again, a great honour, yeah, to take over that, to have the season that we did, and, you know, we think back to the European games and, you know, all the highs that we did during that season. It's to be the captain of that team and to achieve what we did, the consistency that we showed and the bounce back ability, shall we say, that we showed to be a part of that. Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd fling that in at the end there. But, you know, listen, to be the kind of, I suppose, an inverted commas leader of that team, because we had a few leaders, it was, you know, certainly a privilege and something I'm very proud of, to be honest.
Buster, just a final one in this season. Stuart McCall enjoyed a few real standout seasons in his time at Motherwell. I think this one, probably the standout highlight there. Obviously, the next season he would go on to guide the team to second spot again. I think McCall's time at Motherwell perhaps diminished somewhat by the way it ended. It very much petered out. But it's hard to argue with the success that Stuart McCall enjoyed during his time.
I think you're right there. You know, you sort of took the words right out of your mouth there when you say, you know, petered out, because, you know, I think he was in the papers not so long after he did leave us, saying that he tried to leave and been talked out of it before and stuff, and how he just felt as if, you know, he'd done all he could do. But, you know, as you see, I think that sort of pulls a wee bit of a shade over, you know, how good the team were at times. Again, you know, this season we just chatted about, for example, you know, when you've got guys like, you know, Nicky Law, who I'm sure it was him that brought up to Scotland. Nicky Law was a great player. You know, it's just a shame that he went the route that he did as well. Henrik Oyama had a great season. You know, it seemed to have got, Jamie Murphy was always having a great time halfway until he left us, I nearly said Sunderland, for Sheffield United halfway through this season as well. So, you know, it was a good team. It was a good team to watch. It was a great team to follow. And as you say, just, you know, I don't think that's what people think of when they hear a Stuart McCall's name, unfortunately.
And Keith, while we've got you on, obviously you've just returned from Ireland in pre-season duties, the team getting off to a winning start in their pre-season campaign against Crusaders. How do you feel the pre-season preparations are going?
You know, boys have been training hard. We were back at Motherwell for 3 or 4 days, and then we had just a great week over in Dublin for 5 or 6 days, and then up to Belfast for the game against Crusaders. So, no, it's been great. It's been, the preparation's been fantastic. New players have settled in really well. You know, last week was really good for that in terms of being away and together. Really kind of concentrated environment in terms of everybody being together 24/7, and you know, I think they've integrated really well. You know, getting up to speed and the way we like to do things and the way we like to work, and you know, vice versa in terms of, you know, us getting to know them even more on the pitch and off the pitch. So it's been great. You know, no injuries. I mean, obviously, you know, Craig Tanner, unfortunately, he's going to be another couple of months till we see him back. But you know, apart from that, everybody's fit and ready to go and looking in good shape for this period. You know, we've obviously still got 2 friendly games left before we start against Edinburgh, but you know, we're where we want to be in terms of preparation, and you know, we just keep working. We've got our plans in place in terms of training, and you know, we'll be ready come the Edinburgh City game at Firth Park. So no, excited. We obviously had you know, some real highs last season, but you know, we want to kick on again and improve and you know, a lot of aspects of our game, and you know, we feel there is scope to improve, and that's what, you know, the manager and I are determined to do.
You've mentioned new recruits, and from a fan perspective, it's been very encouraging to see the club doing their business early, a host of new arrivals. Would you expect that to be the business done in terms of transfer activity? Is the squad pretty much at full capacity now?
No, I mean, first and foremost, we're delighted with, you know, with what we have done. As you say, the manager and Mark Fowell, our chief scout, you know, it's a constant process, really, even throughout last season in terms of looking forward and planning ahead. And, you know, luckily enough, we've managed to get, you know, get our targets pretty early and get them in amongst the group, which is important. You know, the earlier you can get people in, and we've had pretty much everybody in from day one, which is a real bonus. We are hopeful that there maybe could be some other little bits of business to be done, but you know, again, that depends on, you know, a number of different circumstances. But you know, we are hopeful that there may be other things on the horizon. But, you know, we're delighted with the squad we've got. I think it provides real competition throughout the team, throughout the squad, really. But that's what we want. That's how we train. That's how we pick our team. We want a competitive environment of training. That is a competitive environment of training, very much. And that's the way we like it. That's the way we want it. You know, and pushing each other on. And new lads do. They don't only bring
their own ability and, you know, what we've identified they can bring to the team, they also hopefully, you know, raise the standard round about them, and the boys that are already there, they want to keep their place, so it hopefully raises their level even more, and that's why we've done it, and that's why we, you know, hope the new guys can come in and really, you know, kick us on again, and you know, we feel as if we do that, then, you know, we can you know, hopefully have an exciting season ahead.
It's certainly one that we're all really looking forward to. The close season seems to get shorter and shorter with every year, but it'll be good to get back to the proper stuff after watching the low calibre of the World Cup, that's for sure. Keith, thank you very much for coming on again. We know, as we said, it's been on a wee bit longer than it usually does, but we greatly appreciate you giving up your time.
No, listen, no problem, Andy. And it's, you know, as I said, it is a pleasure to look back and, you know, particularly myself now, not playing, and, you know, you think back, even, you know, brought back some memories to write that actually, you know, you don't think about every day, so it's nice to actually, as to think back and what was a great season overall. So, no, listen, thanks for inviting me on, and, you know, hopefully speak to you guys pretty soon.
Thanks as always, mate. It was very informative, wasn't it? Especially learning that Keith earned his role as captain through his electrical wizardry. That's quite the revelation.
It's always good to have a thread to fall back on, I suppose. No, thanks very much, Keith, again.
Not a problem, guys. Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back before the start of the League Cup games. Until then, thank you and goodbye.